You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. And today, we're going to stray back to basketball instead of continuing to talk about the offseason, because I just wanted to talk about actual games one more time. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8 points, 9 seconds. And on the other line, a man who needs no introduction, but I'm going to introduce him anyway, Max Carlin from over at Celtics Blog. Max, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you, Tony?
Is it Carlin? I didn't ask you before.
Yeah, it's Carlin.
It's not like Carlene or anything?
No, it's Carlin. It's like the comedian.
Oh, I don't know a comedian with that last name, but I'm glad I got it right anyway.
Wait, is that a joke?
Who is the person you're talking about?
George Carlin, like one of the more famous comedians ever.
Man, I yesterday didn't know what the word sullen meant when Adam said it. And today I don't know who this person you're talking about is. So people, I'm losing fans by the day at this point. So Max is more analytically minded like me, which is fun. It makes it more fun to talk about the stuff. But I want you to go first and just talk about what you liked that the Celtics did in this series in taking down the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers couldn't score at all. I mean, especially in the clutch.
I'm writing about that. Awesome.
Yeah, well, they just eviscerated them in the clutch. Like, there were 8 clutch minutes on, like, per NBA's definition, so last 5 minutes within 5 points. And they outscored the Pacers by 16 points. And then in the other 184 minutes of the series, outscored them by 14 points. They just destroyed them in the clutch. Like, you kept the games close enough and then let Kyrie Irving and Jason Tatum do things. And they're pretty good at doing that. And the Pacers just couldn't score.
Yeah, 9 points in those 8 minutes for the Pacers. I was just looking into that. So you've looked at this too. Do you know how many two-pointers the Pacers made in the clutch?
Huh. I know that they made 0 in that third quarter.
The answer is 0 total.
0 in the clutch.
They were 3 for 9 total, 3 for 5 from deep, and 0 for 4 on twos.
Yeah, I mean,
They
could not get dribble penetration.
No, that's my big thesis. And I already wrote about Al Horford, so I feel bad that he's so involved in this again. But like, so it was Al, Kyrie, and Tatum were the only 3 Celtics that played all 8 minutes for you guys. Mm-hmm. And they just like if the Pacers ran a play and didn't get a shot, all they had was like a boy on ice or a pick and roll. And Al Horford's just like, nah, you're not scoring around the basket. Like, they had no chance.
Yeah, they completely took away the paint. And they just weren't scared of Indiana shooters. Like, you can't play lineups with Corey Joseph and Thad Young. And, like, I mean, if they're going to just put Miles Turner in the dunker spot, you can't do that. It just doesn't work.
The plan with that is keep Horford away from the ball, but it doesn't matter because then they'd bring Sabonis out at the same time for some reason.
Yeah, Sabonis was such a disaster in the series.
Yeah, you were tweeting about that. I was going to ask you about that. But
oh, man. I mean, No.
You have to wait. I want everyone to hear this. Max's Twitter is at Max A. Carlin, and he tweeted multiple times that Sabonis is a fraud and was exposed in this series. So first of all, I want people to bring out the pitchforks and yell at you. And second of all, you're kind of right. And I mean, want you to talk about it.
He had a great regular season, but you just sit on his left. And then, I mean, I actually thought he defended the perimeter.
You sit on his right shoulder.
Oh, yeah, on his right shoulder.
I know what you're saying. I just know.
But yeah, and I mean, he actually defended the perimeter, I'd say, shockingly well. But he's not like an imposing defender by any means. He couldn't score at all. He wasn't even taking shots. I thought at least anecdotally he did well on the glass, at least the offensive glass. I don't know if that's true statistically. But yeah, he had a rough series.
Anecdotes are what people care about.
But to the point where I would be really nervous about paying him.
Well, I talked about this before the series. It's like, this is because to me, the whole idea of the Turner Sabonis pairing is like, okay, if it doesn't work in the playoffs, what's the point? But they were good during the regular season. But again, if it doesn't work at this time of the year, what's the point? And then also, say they both play well separately, then you can keep them and just say you have like a 1-2 punch and like psych up fans on that or something. But if one plays clearly better than the other, that's you pick. And I think you and I both agree that one of them did play substantially better than the other one.
Oh, yeah. I was impressed with Turner in this series.
Not that I think that this series is like the defining, like, this is it, pick based off these four games. No. That would be ridiculous. But if that is another a coin in the well of thinking.
It's a data point.
Yes.
And I would just say, like, Sabonis failed in the ways that you'd expect him to fail, which is a little concerning. And then Turner, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, this is what we talked about in the 8.9 group chat, and this is all anecdotal too, but the way Sabonis got exposed, you know, here's your obvious flaws. Al Horford is going to teach you the stupid things you can't do, and you better fix them. Getting exposed in that way almost shows you as a player, like, a clear blueprint. Here's what you have to get better at. These are the things. And that I want to put a positive spin on Sabonis getting owned, but now he clearly has this list. Get a little bit more of a jumper and be able to go to your right hand, and you'll be substantially better.
Yeah, but I mean, Russell Westbrook coming out and, you know, missing 30 jumpers a game, like, hasn't taught him that he needs to develop a jumper. Like,
it made a good Onion article, though.
It did make a good Onion article. No, but I mean, I think it's a lot easier to say, okay, like, here are your glaring weaknesses. Now you can improve them because you know what they are. That's true. Guessing he already knew what his glaring
weaknesses were.
He's 21. Yeah, he's still young. I don't think he's hopeless. I just think that, I mean, go back to the Draymond thing, the 82-game player versus 16-game player. I think he's more of an 82-game player. And that was probably, I think, what people were thinking in the first place. Anyway, it went, I think, as badly as you could have expected.
And then game 4 went well. And lo and behold, he's able to get to his left hand. It's like, well, maybe work on that other one, that right hand.
Yep.
One. It was really a thing that we would tweet Sabonis right hand alert when he would score.
Yeah, that's why I always used to do that with Marvin Bagley during draft stuff.
Oh, man, I missed the mark on Marvin Bagley. I thought he was going to be horrible.
Yeah, I was back and forth. I think I ended up with him like fifth on my board. But he I think, was better at things that I expected that he was going to be bad at this year. Like, he had some definite flashes defensively, like, in terms of real awareness, to the point where I don't know, I think he's probably like a better prospect than Ayton at this point, but
yeah,
there are questions.
Before we started recording, Max and I kindly dumped on Terry Rozier. However, I will say that Terry Rozier actually played well in this series.
I think well is a stretch, but he played significantly
less bad. Yes, compared to his regular season, he was good.
because I think that a lot of people, at least during the regular season, still thought Terry Rozier was a good defensive player, even though he's one of the worst point-of-attack defenders in the league, I think. He just takes himself out of the play by getting so far behind on every screen. But, in this series, like, he defended pretty well. And just didn't make mistakes on offense. Like, he didn't dribble around for 30 seconds, not 30 seconds, that's not possible, but didn't dribble around for 15 seconds and, you know, launch ridiculous fading 17-footers. He just kind of didn't mess up on offense and played, like, pretty competent defense.
Yeah, the defense was what it was about to me. And this is the smallest reason of impression for me, but, like, Smart's out. So T-Rose playing a little bit of the two. And to come in to play off-ball guard and not do horrible was also, to me, like, oh, that's pretty impressive.
He's got to play the two. I mean, because they just can't have him on ball.
On the Celtics, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. No, it's honestly on any team. But specifically on a team, when you employ Gordon Hayward and Al Horford and Jason Tatum as these, like, secondary offensive options, you can't have Terry Rozier playing on ball. It's just insane. The guy, like, he's the worst decision maker in the world.
You know what? I said this wasn't an off-season podcast, but everybody listened to this and never tweeted me all summer about wanting Terry Rozier on the Pacers.
He's a terrible, terrible, terrible player. Like,
that's exactly what I wanted.
But yeah, I mean, his minutes in this series were, I would say, survivable more than, like, good. But you know, survivable if you have Kyrie Irving and Al Horford playing in the other minutes is enough to win against.
Well, if just one of Terry or Marcus Morris played how they did in the regular season, the Pacers could have won a game or two.
And they Morris was great in game one and
fantastic.
Solid in four.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he was really good in game one. And I think pretty solid in four and really abysmal in two and three.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I am looking forward to him not being on the Celtics.
I wouldn't mind him on the Pacers for like what he makes now, but
yeah, you would.
I don't know, man. I think Pritch really wants a stretch four and
the thing is, you're not getting him for what he makes now, though, because Philly wants him. I guess like probably Brooklyn wants him. Just a lot of teams are going to want a guy who's 6'9" and can sort of kind of fake shoot. Yeah, I think he's more than a fake shooter, because when I think of the fake shooters, I'm thinking like
fake shooters are like Muscala. Yeah, you're right.
Well, yeah, no, I'm thinking guys are like Darren Collison, who like yeah shoots a good.
But he won't actually
take them.
Whoa.
He doesn't take them.
That is a lie. You were saying an untrue statement. What do you consider not taking them?
I don't.
You shot three attempts per game, like five seasons in a row.
Yeah, I guess that's. I don't know. It seems like he hesitates.
That was a bad one.
Yeah, it seems like he hesitates a lot, and like
he
really doesn't launch.
His release takes like 7 seconds.
Well, yeah. So I mean, if your release takes 7 seconds, then you're not getting them up in opportunities when you should.
I don't know if it's that. I think his should and shouldn't is like the parking lot is between him and the basket, or him and the closest defender.
No, but when I'm saying like a non-shooter, like someone like a James Ennis.
James Ennis is the guy that everybody.
Yeah, knows. He's the guy. Like he's gonna shoot an okay percentage, but he's also not gonna take these real opportunities. Mook will take the you know shots that he should take, and the shots that he shouldn't take. He's just like gonna go through stretches of making a really large number of them and then not making a really large number of them.
He's a your turn, my turn player, which is why I don't like him.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
I've tweeted that before and no one ever asked me. He's like, I feel like there's possessions where he gets the ball and he's like, no matter what the set is or what's going on around him, he thinks it's my turn to shoot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Mook definitely fancies himself a...
And then if he missed...
Like, isolation. He looks at himself like an early 2000s star wing.
Exactly, and you know, even if he misses, he knows like, okay, someone else shoots next time. But it's like those kind of players just rub me wrong. It's like, no, it's not your turn. Like, if you get a shot, you then take it. But
back to the Collison thing briefly, I kind of stand by it. He's taking like he's taking like 4.5 per 100 possessions as a point guard. Like that's not that. That's like Colin Sexton levels of attempts, and I wouldn't say that Colin Sexton is like a shooter.
I think hang on. I need to make sure I get this math right, if you don't mind. I think when over the last four seasons, it takes 791 threes and hit 42.5% of them. I'm calling you a shooter. I don't care how many you take.
Yeah, I mean it's about like he's not really taking them off the dribble.
That's not a shooter to me. I don't care about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think to me at least volume of attempts is a lot more meaningful than
I think volume means a lot in terms of like elite shooter, but I think Darren Collison is surely a good shooter, not a fake good shooter.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm undecided on it, but I think that he's not the level of shooter, at least in terms of willingness, that you want out of a point guard.
Correct. That is due to his release. I agree with you there. I'm with you on that one. Yeah, and he was terrible in this series. Terrible.
Yeah, he was really bad. And he was bad last year too, right?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. That's it. It's so weird because it's like nothing changes that what he like does, really. He's just plays worse, misses shots.
Yeah, I mean he's a tiny point guard with a really slow release.
Yeah. And can't defend anybody ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like he's a good on time, on target passer. Like that goes away for some reason. He's more inclined to shoot that crappy pull up 15-footer that I hate.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating because the whole regular season he's a better offensive player than Corey Joseph, and then he's not.
Yeah, but Joseph is not a good offensive player. He's a really good defender.
Joseph led the Pacers in field goal percentage in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's
at 50%.
I don't know what that means exactly, but
at a gaudy 50%. Yeah, there were a lot of problems with the Pacers offense, and I want to, but you know, it was bad, and there's no good way to shake it. But I think not enough credit is given to the Celtics defense for putting them in these positions to fail.
Yeah, the Celtics defense is really good and like really, really well suited to just destroy the Pacers, especially when you like when you get Kyrie and Rozier like actually playing good on ball defense. It's game over because you know Horford's just gonna be so dominant as a team defender, and so is Tatum, and I think Hayward was pretty solid, and Hayward was actually kind of shockingly good, I would say, tracking Boyan off ball.
Hayward had a great series.
What?
Hayward just had a great series.
Yeah, I mean the numbers don't look that unbelievable, like the box score numbers, but I think that he looked pretty solid. I thought he defended well.
Didn't miss a shot in the clutch.
He didn't miss a shot in the clutch. Wow.
4 for 4.
Yeah, it was so exciting, and I think it was in game four that they were going to Hayward isolations like 2 times in the clutch.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And, yeah, I mean this dude.
So cool.
He was scared, but he was scared of like initiating offense without a screen for I don't know like 74 games, and then there were like two possessions, one against Miami and I forget what the other one was late in the season where he just he got a switch onto a big and his eyes just lit up and he was you know exploding to the rim and it was so exciting because I mean he didn't look like Utah Hayward like he doesn't look like Utah Hayward but he looks like an actually good NBA player, which is exciting.
That is good. That will help a lot in your next series, which we'll get to momentarily.
That's the hope.
Yeah, I think you should start against the Bucks, but we'll talk.
Yeah, about I agree. I think
yes.
They should go back to
good. Well, that's title. Boring. That's boring for the show, but we'll get to that in a minute. I just think it's so interesting that outside of one quarter every game, the Pacers just did well and they stuck right with them. And it was just one stretch of mental fortitude and star power that really vaulted the Celtics over the top. And then it almost makes it more frustrating, but
yeah, it is. I think that's kind of the idea of this team though, right? You play probably, you know, you be the best defensive team in the league for 44 minutes or whatever. And then you just let Kyrie Irving win you games.
Yeah. He was awesome.
Yeah. He's incredible.
That's what we said. That's what Adam said before the series. We both picked Celtics. He picked Celtics in 5. I said 6. Was who is the best player? That's the Celtics. Who is the best coach? That's the Celtics. Who has home court advantage? That's the Celtics. So that's easy right there. But like home court barely mattered. You know, all the games were about the same. And
yep,
you know, it was just like, okay, here's Kyrie and Brad Stevens kicking your ass.
Yeah, that's how it happens.
For a big stretch every game. I'm gonna force a break here, and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk about the Bucks for like 5 to 10 minutes.
Cool.
So Celtics Bucks, round 2 sweeps, which is boring, but Max, fun fact for you. The non-Vic Pacers were 23-23, which is the same win percentage as the Pistons, so they were basically a Pistons level team.
Yeah, so who do you think is better? The Pistons, the Pistons with Blake or the Pacers without Vic?
The Pacers without Vic went 3-1 against the Pistons this
year. Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that.
I have an answer for you because of that.
Yeah, I think the Pacers are better. They do, especially in the playoffs. I mean, Drummond, it's been rough for Drummond.
Horrible for Drummond.
Yeah.
I never know what to make of that guy.
I still don't buy it. I know the numbers, the impact numbers were really good this year, and I still just...
Every impact stat that has a box score prior is going to love Drummond for the rest of time. It is what
Well, yeah. I mean, it's going to love his defense.
It is. Yeah, it is what it is. But Bucks-Celtics now should be cool. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know who Pacers person is because it's a division opponent and the team that knocked you out, but I'm looking forward to the MVP and the deeper star team, but I want to know what you think about the matchup.
Yeah, so I'm going through the regular season games right now. I don't know. I'm leaning Bucks in 6 or 7. 6 as of right now, but I think I'll probably end up with it at 7. But yeah, I mean, in the 3 games this season, there was a 4-point home win when I think everyone on both teams was healthy.
Or who? Maybe Boston, the win?
Yeah, 4-point Boston win in Boston. I think everyone but Jaylen Brown was healthy for both teams. Then there was a 1-point Milwaukee win in Milwaukee with, I think, everyone healthy. And then a 13-point Milwaukee win in Boston with Horford, Baines, and Morris out. So, I mean, that game is meaningless. The the other two, I think, are fairly relevant. The Boston win was, I think, like the seventh or eighth game of the season. So stuff has definitely changed since then. I've been going through that one just now, and Milwaukee was really aggressive trying to just take away the paint. So like anytime there was a drive, they'd help down from the wing and stuff like that. It was kind of insane. And it was the game where Lopez was dropping like all the way into the paint on Horford, Kyrie pick and pops, and the Celtics hit 24 threes, I think, just shy of the NBA record. So I don't know how relevant that is. I'm excited to watch the 1-point game, because that one was really a slugfest, I think. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's going to be close. I think that as long as Horford is effective, and I think he has to be a lot more of a shot maker than he was against Indiana. But I think it's going to be close.
And no offense to Horford, because I Horford's going to guard Giannis, right?
I don't know.
Your makes me think no right now. Yeah, I figured he would.
I don't know. I think so, but I don't know.
So the blueprint for Giannis is doesn't exist, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't.
That's what I actually am going to say. But Thad had a really good game on him this year. And
that's what everyone's saying.
What Giannis said, Giannis said it. It was the only Pacers win over the Bucks. The big thing that Giannis said was he was just staying in front of him like crazy. Mm-hmm. And Thad has much faster foot speed than Horford. No offense to Horford, but
yeah, that's
his drawback. He's slow. So not that matchup's like a problem for you guys. Giannis is going to be amazing no matter what, but that doesn't really sway my opinion of the series, is that Giannis is going to be awesome no matter, like, with Horford guarding him.
Yeah.
But because Horford is on him, that gives the other Bucks more opportunity. And that's where I think the series is like, if the defense collapses and all of a sudden Chris Middleton is left with space to do something, or Malcolm Brogdon is left with space to do something, what are those some things and are they enough? Because I think the Celtics actually, on the other end, have the advantage. So I am looking very hard at that, but I don't know what's
it? Do you want to guess what Chris Middleton's true shooting was in their 7-game first round series against the Celtics last year?
He was pretty bad last year, wasn't he? So
no. Oh, no, he was not bad.
If you're telling me that, I'm gonna go 70.
71.9%.
Yeah,
that's he did not miss.
That's very good.
It was if he does half of that again, the Celtics are done for.
That's like a trip to the foul line for a lot of guys.
Yeah, it was brutal. He could not miss.
That's nuts. That series was crazy because the Bucks like finally figured out that switch and defense thing, and then in game 7 they're like, nah, never mind.
Jason Terry, I think, played 20 minutes in that game 7.
Oh, it made no sense. It's like, oh, look, they figured something out, and they didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what happens when Joe Prunty is your coach.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. I wonder what they're going to do, though, in terms of, like, if the Celtics come out and they're still doing a deep drop with Lopez and just Horford just starts draining threes on them, like, what are they going to do? Are they going to go away from Lopez, who was, I don't know, do we think he was their second or third most important player this year?
Most important? Brooke Lopez?
Yeah.
Fourth?
Really? Fourth? Yeah. I feel like having that stretch five and, like, crazy stretch five.
It's hard for me to like separate like Bledsoe and Middleton both having great seasons.
I think
of course having Brook Lopez helped them do that. So yeah, I don't know. He's in that group with them and it's closer than everybody thinks. I understand.
Yeah. But like, can you just, whatever he is, your second, third, fourth most important player, is Mike Budenholzer really going to bench that guy? If that becomes necessary, because I think it could. I don't think that it necessarily will, but if Horford's really destroying them, it definitely could. And
I don't know if you want more Giannis at the five if you're the Celtics, though.
Yeah, I haven't looked into the numbers of how that was this year. I know it's never statistically, because
they're not gonna go Mirotić or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess what they technically do is they do like Ilyasova at the five.
Blech.
And So it's sort of I mean, it's sort of Giannis at the five, but I think Ilyasova is often on the five.
We talked about fake players earlier. Ilyasova is a fake good player, and he has been for a very
long time. I don't know. I kind of buy Ilyasova.
Yeah, okay.
He's
nothing about Ilyasova makes me go, oh yeah, he's good. No,
I mean, I don't really like watching him, but I think that he's like an extremely smart defensive player. And while those charges are like honestly fairly reckless and annoying, they actually are effective, and he can shoot. So I don't know. I kind of buy him. I don't.
The biggest impact a charge has on a basketball game is getting the crowd into it.
Yeah, in some cases.
I'm just not an Ilyasova guy.
I mean, I think he can be awful.
I think you can play him off the court if you want, if you're boxing pretty easily.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, Brook Lopez being that important is interesting. So Baines will guard him for sure. Okay.
I don't know about that.
We'll do the discussion now. So I think Hayward should start because of that, what I just
said. Yeah, I mean, my thing with Lopez is he can still post up, but they don't use him in the post. So I think you should just put a small on. I mean, not a guard, but like a Hayward type on Lopez, just someone who's going to contest his shots, because you know you get a huge advantage then offensively, and it's really not much of a difference who's, you know, if the guy is 6'8" or 6'11" contesting his shots.
Well, like Hayward would be better switched on to Giannis if that were to happen. Not that that super matters. And on the other end, I think that that's where the matchup more favors the Celtics, is when you get to offense and all of a sudden you're like, wait, who do we put on Hayward? Oh crap.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I would go back to the original starting lineup, Brown, Hayward in there.
Yes. And I love being in tune with my teams.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, I think it's time. Like, I think Hayward and Brown have been good enough recently. And you can't afford to waste minutes against this Bucks team. They are so good.
Try to steal a few Tice minutes, you'll lose the series.
Oh God.
All right.
Actually, Polar Fall on Twitter. He thinks that
genius guy.
Yes, genius guy. But he thinks that his big theory on how to defend Giannis is to like give him chest bumps to force him off balance. And he said that like obviously Ogilvy is good at that, but he thinks Tice is good at it as well. So maybe Tice will be a sneaky little.
Morales was all about Semi last series, so.
Yeah, he's a really bad offensive player.
There is a sneaky role for him, I guess.
Yeah, I mean the role is go harass Giannis for 4 minutes fouls. And use all your fouls exactly.
Get 5 fouls.
Yeah.
All right. I'm glad we got to talk of the Celtics, and I got to talk about basketball a little more.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun, Max. Man, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having
me. Where can people find you and Celtics content? Should they continue to pursue it?
You can find me on Twitter at Max A. Carlin, and then also Celtics blog and Step Back over at FanSided for general NBA there. Stuff.
My fault.
Yeah, but I'll just follow me on Twitter, and I will shamelessly plug everything that I do.
Shamelessly plug everything. Yeah, Celtics blog, the place to go for all Celtics needs. And they have quite a few very famous alumni. So Max could be on that list one day. Thank you everybody for tuning in. I promise off-season content's on the way. I'm writing about actual basketball, so I wanted to talk more about it. Actually, tomorrow we'll do off-season stuff. So yeah, stick around for that, and could have a cool guest coming on later in the week. So also stick around for that. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great rest of your Wednesday.